welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, El Ariel, and you can find us on all the streaming platforms, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. We're also at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. And I mentioned last episode, we actually got named to the list of top career podcasts for 2018. Holla! Very happy about that. Obviously, could not have done it without all of my amazing, incredible guests. So shout out to all of you for making that happen. And you can actually find out more about that on the website, musicjobspodcast.com. Last episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with Vicky Wang, who is the Los Angeles director of SoFar Sounds, sofarsounds.com. They are this innovative, really cool new artist performance platform. They create these kind of secret pop-up shows for artists to perform, very carefully curated with different genres, and it is really an intimate, incredible live music experience for music fans. So very, very cool. Check it out. This week, I have the pleasure of interviewing Adam Lewis, who is a Boston boy. Very happy to chat with him. He is the co-founder of Planetary Group, which has been doing artist development for over two decades, and they represent every genre, every artist practically. They've done like John Mayer, the Buzzcocks, Yo Gabba Gabba, Portugal the Man, Courtney Barnett. I mean, just amazing roster of clients. And he walks us through his career trajectory of music promotion starting out. He actually had a record label coming from his dorm room in college. He was music director of his college radio station. So he just kind of takes us through music promotion in the college music scene and then the trajectory of Planetary to Los Angeles. So just really fascinating, full of knowledge. And he is such a rock star and a trooper because I had a shitload of technical difficulties and my mic wasn't working. And you'll hear I had to switch to my crappy cell phone at the latter half of the interview. And Adam just hung in there and stuck it out. He was such a rock star. So thank you for that. Now, you know, I always love to start with some music. So let's hear one of Adam's favorite tracks from a current client, Low Cut Connie. Here is Revolution Rock and Roll.
Come on, children, rip it up. Let the jerk boss clean it up. Touch my body, touch my soul. Revolution, rock and roll. But I'm still a loser, and I'm still a boozer.
Chasing down. Hey Adam, thank you so much for joining me on Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job?
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm a Boston girl. Are you born and raised in Boston?
I was out in the suburbs, in all honesty. I grew up in Lexington and then moved to Alston, Rock City, USA. And
right on.
That's where I started. The company was in Alston, and then we were in down in Four Point Channel area and then the South End, and now we're in L.A. But yeah, Boston.
Nice.
Boston will always
nice.
Be. I am a Boston guy. It'll always be my my place.
Right on. Love that dirty water.
That's right.
Tell me a little bit about growing up in Boston and about how you were first exposed to music.
My parents always appreciated the arts, so music was in my life from a pretty early age in terms of, being in choir and band and having music on in the house all the time and stuff like that. And then, just discovering... just having friends that kind of turned you on to music in junior high and high school, different bands, and you kind of get sucked in. And, I got sucked into kind of reading the liner notes on albums. We were growing up in Lexington, we were still on the T. You could take the bus in from Lexington to the subway and then go into Harvard Square. And so I would, all throughout high school, I would go into Harvard Square every weekend, not every weekend, but a lot of weekends, and just buy records. There were so many used record stores there. Everyone was selling their promos, mm-hmm. I think. And so I just got hooked, on just collecting records and discovering music. And, I was reading Billboard throughout high school. I got a job at Strawberry's Records and Tapes in the mall, while in high school,
That's awesome.
I knew early that I wanted to do something in the music, you know, music biz. That was, you know, I fell in love with records and wondering who these people were that were thanked on the liner notes and, you know, who were these people in the photos on the industry pages of Billboard, you know, and I kind of fell in love with that. And once you start getting some free records and start getting invited, you know, invited to shows for free and getting on the guest list, you know, that was a drug in and of itself as a teenager, you know, and it was kind of off to the races from there.
Growing up, like, did your parents have you take lessons?
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure. I was in all sorts of, I wasn't any good in bands, I'll tell you that. I didn't practice enough, but I was a pretty good singer and I had lots of lessons in that and, you know, went to the districts and, you know, all of that, you know, stuff and concert choirs and barbershop quartets type stuff. And, you know, was very interested in that, sang a lot of different musicals and had a lot of exposure, you know, through that. But at the same time as doing that, I was also really involved in the behind the scenes stuff on promotion and marketing and advertising those events as well. And so I kind of got a little bit of a taste of how promotion worked.
Were you in high school bands, like your own bands kind of thing?
I did have a band in high school. We shouldn't talk about it.
You're not going to tell us the name of it.
Oh, no. No, I'm not going to tell you the name of it. But it was, yeah, it was, you know, it happened.
Nice.
Can't say I was any good, but, you know, I think we had, you know, two gigs. Luckily, aww, I think we graduated. But anyway.
Now, what about after high school? Did you? What were you kind of thinking?
Yeah, after high school, you know, I'd always wanted to go to Emerson College in Boston, which, you know, is kind of the arts and mass communications and music business type of school. But I actually didn't, when I got accepted there, but I didn't, at the time, Emerson was a different school, a lot smaller, and they didn't have their own campus. It was very spread out. And I just didn't like the vibe of it. And they wouldn't let you touch the equipment until your junior year. I was pretty impatient. And I decided to go to a small school up in New Hampshire called Franklin Pierce, and a small liberal arts school, only about 1,500 students or so. And when I did the tour there, I fell in love with the campus and with the people, and I had a great interaction with the head of the mass communications program there, who really spent a lot of time, you know, with me and showing me the radio station there and talking to me about the program. And I just decided that was the place for me. And I went there, and, you know, by the end of my freshman year, you know, it was a small school and I had sharp elbows. So I kind of took over, you know, I was running my radio station by the end of my freshman year. I was writing for the school paper, you know, doing music reviews, and I got elected to the social committee for booking bands for my junior and senior year there. So I was booking bands, and I just kind of, you know, took over and just really, like, I was really focused, and that's really what I wanted to do. Like, school was kind of secondary. I did well in school, but the schoolwork was just kind of something that I had to do so that it would allow me to keep doing the radio station and the booking and all the other stuff that was much more important to me. You know, and I put I put a couple records out while I was in college with bands that I was managing, you know, ran the label out of my dorm room type of stuff. And
wow. Were you singing, you know, on any of them or no?
No. These are bands that I was managing. Once I got out of high school, I was done on the performance front. I was not going to pursue that. but yeah, I mean, just, you know, diving into the college radio station for, you know, 3.5 years was really kind of what got me going in this business, and you know, met so many people, you know, in the industry, and you know, got invited to so many shows and to interview bands. And, you know, some of those people that I met, you know, way back then, you know, late 80s, early 90s, I'm still dealing with today, which is amazing. And you know, that's kind of the beauty of the music business, right? So
yeah. Well, it's interesting too, and I'm sure you know this already, but just a small liberal arts school in New Hampshire, and you were able to kind of be a lot more.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it allowed me to stand out, right? I mean, if I'd gone to Emerson, I would have been, everyone would have been trying to do the same thing. And,
right.
You know, the good thing about going to a, you know, small liberal arts school is I was able to kind of stand out and you know, that was what I wanted to do, and the support was there for me to do it from the staff and the administration, you know, and I learned early how to deal with politics and, you know, get funding from the school to do certain things, you know, to get upgrades for the studio and to get budgets to bring bands to campus. And you know, they're trusting a 19-year-old kid with, you know, $40,000 a semester for programming. You know, that's great. You
right.
know,
right.
you know, what an opportunity to kind of learn how to book a show and how to do negotiate a contract and what to strike from a contract and what is a rider and what's production, what does sound and lights and lifts mean? You know, all of that stuff, you know, what does it, you know, do we need power? Do we need a generator? All of these things to start learning, you know, that early, you know, it was great, you know, and you can't buy that, you know, and you know, the fact that they kind of let you do that and you know, is awesome, you know, and that led, you know, and because I was doing all that stuff, you know, I had great summer jobs during college as well, you know, because of that, I met a band that needed a tour manager, you know, so between my junior and senior year, I traveled the entire country tour managing a band, you know, that was signed to IRS Records. And, you know, we traveled all over North America and, you know, opening for Nine Inch Nails and Squeeze and House of Love and a bunch of other bands from, you know, back in that era. And, you know, mm-hmm. again, you know, 21-year-old kid learning how to advance a show, how to deal with the hotel rooms, deal with the directions, you know, deal with the merch settlement every night, getting paid, figuring out what the deposits are and all that, you know. Great experience, you know, to go out on the road and, mm-hmm. and learn what it's like to tour and, you know, and how hard it is to tour and how bands kind of think when they're sitting in the van driving, you know, for 8 hours between Minneapolis and Denver, you know, and,
right.
and what kind of, you know, and maybe the record's not doing so well and kind of, you know, what's going to go through a band's mind when they've got nothing but time sitting in that van, you know, to think and, you know, and having, to, you know, having to realize that you need to work just as hard as the band, you know, in later years, you know, as I'm doing promotion, like, you know, and I know what it's like for a band to be in that van and I know what it's like to show up in the venue and there's no posters up for your show, for your appearance or, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, that's a very real thing. So yeah, I mean, I think, you know, going
yeah,
to a small liberal
yeah.
arts school, you know, it really, for me, it worked really well. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that it wouldn't have also worked at Emerson. You know, maybe I would have learned how to have even sharper elbows earlier. But, you know, I think, you know, for me, it worked really well.
How did you learn, like, you know, like starting a label out of your dorm room? And
when you're young, you just do it. And you figure it out as you're doing it. You're kind of fearless, right? And so I'd been being pitched, you know, when I put those records out, I had already been being pitched for 3 years from promoters. I knew what needed to happen to get a record, you know, on the college charts and you know, so it wasn't really that hard. You know, I saved up my money and I sold a lot of promos so I'd have money to press the records. You know, we were pressing vinyl back then and saved all the mailers that I, you know, all the other records that came into the station came in with cardboard mailers that are expensive. So I saved all of those and reused them all. I was green before it was popular. You know, sent them out and I hired a person at a radio promotions firm to help me, and between the two of us, you know, we split up the stations around the country and started calling them all and trying to get them to play the record and you know, and frankly the narrative of a college music director putting out a record plays well. Other college music directors were like, hey, that's pretty cool. I'll support this. And I like the music too. So it works, you know? And so we were able to, you know, get it, you know, the record on the chart and did quite well. And, you know, I got some distribution for it through a distributor and, you know, that, in the Northeast, I was blessed with Newbery Comics, you know, who were very supportive.
Oh yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. independent artists and labels, so that, you know, they took a bunch, you know, on consignment or whatnot, but they actually pay, so, you know, that was fine. And then I did the press by myself. I learned how to do press. I just started, you know, calling folks. Again, you know, I'd been music director for 3 years, so I'd been going to a lot of shows, and if, you know, if you go to a lot of shows, you meet people, and all of a sudden, you know, you're after a show or before the show, the label's having dinner or drinks or something, or a reception or meeting the band, you start seeing the same people at shows over and over again. And those people were at the time the writers, you know, for the different, you know, the daily paper, the weekly paper, the, you know, different magazines and whatnot, you know. And so I knew the writer, the Boston writer, you know, the music writer for Musician Magazine and Pulse Magazine and Boston Rock and Boston Globe, Boston Phoenix, you know. And so you start working those connections, and you learn by doing, you know, and you're kind of fearless at that age. And that's just basically kind of how you learn it. And I've done some internships as well during college. You know, my senior year, I put all my classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I interned at Ryko Disc in Salem. And, you know, that was a really exciting label at the time. And you know, they were reissuing all the David Bowie records on CD for the first time, and everyone wanted those CDs. So, they had other acts as well, and newer stuff. But they only had one guy doing radio for the whole country, and so they had me doing a lot of the college stations, what are called the non-commercial stations, which there wasn't even a word really for that at that time. They were just kind of, it was commercial radio stations and then kind of everything else. And they gave me everything else and had me start calling those stations. And, I think my training was for probably, you know, 20 minutes or something. And, you know, basically it was just, you call up and you say, Hey, I'm Adam from Ryko. We've got some records out. We'd love to talk to you about them, type of thing. And you just learn, you just, you know, trial by fire. You know, it's, at the end of the day, you know, the thing is, you know, you're just talking about music. This isn't rocket science, right? So people are pretty forgiving and pretty open to talk to you, especially if you're calling about, you know, some records that they're interested in. You know, like I said, everyone wanted the David Bowie records, so it was pretty easy to, you know, strike up a conversation and start to build some friendships there.
Yeah, that's excellent. So what about now after college, you're armed with all this?
The company that I had been booking a lot of shows with when I graduated offered me a job. They were based in Woodstock, New York. And, you know, frankly, it was a recession when I graduated in 91. There wasn't a lot of, none of my friends were getting job offers. So I kind of jumped at it and took that job and moved to Woodstock, New York. Which was great. The job itself was great. You know, I learned how to do booking of national talent. I learned how to deal with the major agencies, you know, the William Morris's and the CAAs and Monterey Peninsula's of the world. And we were booking national talent at college campuses. And the person I was working for is a company called Concert Ideas. A guy named Harris Goldberg had been doing it. At that time, he'd already been doing it for, you know, 20 plus years in the college market, and he needed another person to help, you know, deal with that. It was just a one man company, and I was the second person. But you know, basically he was handling most of the major schools in the Northeast in terms of booking their fall and spring weekend and parent weekend entertainment. So we were doing, you know, University of Connecticut, Penn State, most of the upstate New York SUNY schools, a lot of others. And I brought in a bunch of schools myself, like Bates and Northeastern and stuff like that. And, you know, we were booking, I mean, at the time we were booking a lot of hip hop because hip hop was exploding. So a lot of De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest, Public Enemy, stuff like that, which was really quite exciting. And, but we also booked a lot of comedy, a lot of George Carlin, Dana Carvey, Howie Mandel, stuff like that. I remember putting a whole string of dates together for 10,000 Maniacs, whole string of dates for Spin Doctors, CNC Music Factory, you know. A lot of the stuff that was big at the time. I remember we did a Public Enemy and Anthrax show together. We did a couple Billy Joel shows. A couple years later into it, I remember I did a lot of shows with like Live and the Ocean Blue and stuff like that. You know, whatever kind of worked at colleges and you know, working with bands that wanted to, you know, play in that marketplace. And You know, so learned how to be an agent, learned how to sell, I think was really actually the biggest lesson I got out of that, is just learning how to pitch, you know, pitching a band into wanting to go to a school they'd never heard of, and pitching a school into, you know, using us to get their talent for their show. You know, technically you're called a middle agent because, you know, the band has their own primary agent. But that primary agent doesn't really want to deal with a bunch of college kids deciding on whether or not they want to do a show or not. So that's kind of where the middle agent comes in, and the middle agent kind of walks the school through the whole process, teaches them how to do it, gets them up to speed, and puts an offer in to the artist on behalf of the school. So you have to do a contract with the school, and you have to do a contract, you know, with the band. But it was great experience. I did that for a while, and I wasn't particularly happy in Woodstock because it was a little remote for someone who's, you know, 22. Yeah. And I'd already been in rural New Hampshire for four years. Although, you know, the good thing about rural New Hampshire was it was only an hour and a half from Boston. You could you know, get to Boston pretty easily. It's just, you know, at the end of Route 2, really. Right. Woodstock was a bit much for me. So I then moved from there. I moved back to Boston and continued booking shows with Concert Ideas out of Boston, out of a small office that I set up for myself, and brought in some more schools that way in the Northeast there. But, you know, people kind of knew me as a radio person. So I was always getting approached about doing radio promotion, you know, for them as well, and I had been turning that down for quite a while. But, you know, when I was in Boston, I you know, frankly, I kind of needed the money, so I was, for a while, I was doing both. Yeah, I was doing the radio I started doing promotion on my own on the side at the same time as doing the booking of the shows, because the promotion is kind of is quick money. You get hired and you get paid right away, and you're doing the promotion and marketing, you know, the next week or whatever. Whereas the show, you know, you book a show and it might be 4 months out, five months out, and you don't get paid until the show happens. So, mm-hmm. You know, I just needed the money. So I needed quicker money. So I started doing more and more radio promotion, and that really built. And, you know, for a while I was doing both, doing a lot of both. And then finally it just didn't make sense for me to keep doing the booking. The promotion part really, really made more sense. And that was where the kind of company was growing. And so that's when I started really seriously doing promotion and started the company kind of a little bit more legit and started doing promotion full time and growing the company. I should also say, in the middle there too, after I left Woodstock, before I moved back to Boston, when I moved to Boston, I moved to Alston. So that's what I was referring to before. I started the company right on Harvard Ave there. But when I left Woodstock, before I got to Boston, I went on the road for 2 months as a tour manager for a British band called Alien Sex Fiend. And mm-hmm. we went all over North America with this gothic industrial rock band called Alien Sex Fiend, and it was amazing. You know, amazing. You know, it was a bus tour, so it was my first time being on a bus. And you know, we went as far north as Edmonton and as far south as Miami. So I mean, we went, we covered the whole country, and that was pretty. Pretty amazing experience. Again, for, you know, someone who was 22, 23 years old, it was an amazing experience, and learned an incredible amount.
Sounds like it.
yeah, for sure.
You were saying, like, the relationships that you had back in the day, you still have today. Would you say that it's kind of like a family? Like, it's the same people, you know, you don't want to burn bridges. You definitely want to maintain relationships, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, you know, you hear that cliche all the time, but I mean, it's really, can't stress it enough. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. these are the people that this industry is only relationships, you know, I am still working with and getting hired by people I was working with and, you know, knew when I was a teenager and, you know, early 20s. I mean, when I interned at Rykodisc, I had three kind of people that were, you know, one immediate boss, then his boss, and then a peer of that person, you know, that I dealt with on a regular basis. All three of those people have hired me in the last 2 years on different projects, you know, 20
oh,
years
wow.
later, you know,
yeah.
So it's, you can't stress it enough. I mean, you know, it's it's a very small business. There's a lot of there's a few lifers, you know, that are just there for a long time, and you know, these are the folks that you want to go to when you're looking for a job or a reference or a lead in terms of you know, opening the door at a company, or, you know, no one goes away. You know, that mm-hmm. that's the thing. If you're always surprised, you know, just how many people are still kind of out there. I mean, obviously in the last few years with, you know, there was a lot of consolidation in the music business, and so some people did get out and whatnot. But, you know, there's a lot of the same people I'm dealing with, which is, and mm-hmm. it is a family. You are friends. You're all kind of, it's kind of a, you know, it is a crazy business, right? So you're all kind of, you know, brothers in that war together, brothers and sisters, mm-hmm. in that crazy, crazy lifestyle that we lead, right? I mean, it is a weird job. We go to shows for a living. We right. talk about music all day. We go to festivals, and that's considered work. And, you know, the days yeah. are kind of long and kind of crazy and whatnot. So we're all, you know, it's you really want to stay in touch with everyone that you meet. And, you know, Facebook's made that so much easier, you know, to stay in touch mm-hmm. with people and LinkedIn as well, but can't stress that enough.
What about the move to LA? Talk a little bit about that and why you felt, you know, was that something you felt was necessary, or it was just sort of a natural expansion of the business, or?
Well, I wish I could tell you there was this master plan and that I was so smart to do this, but the reality was we had two offices for quite a while. We had a Boston office mm-hmm. and we had an LA office, and we had the LA office because my business partner at the time had married a woman from LA. So he wanted to be based out here. He started an office here. We hired a few staff here. And so we were bi-coastal for quite a while. Mm-hmm. At a certain point, it didn't make sense in a downturn post 08. It didn't make the most sense to have two offices going at the full time. So we closed the Boston office. I worked from home for a while, and I was going back and forth from Boston to LA a lot. And then I finally took the plunge to come to LA, and as we ramped up the LA office as well. And you know, as all of that was happening, at the same time, the industry was contracting, and you know, the labels that were once in Boston are no longer there. You know, that, you know, the Ryko discs are gone, the Rounder records are gone, most of the independents that we were working with were gone. There's still some cool independents there for sure, but all the local major label offices, you know, there used to be a Warner office, a Sony office, an MCA office, whatever, you know, all these offices are all gone. You know, so it made sense to be in LA. At the same time, you know, the company had started. I had started traveling a lot. Around the world, I was going to a lot of different festivals and getting hired by a lot of overseas bands coming that wanted to come into the U.S. market, and mm-hmm. and as part of that, we were working with a lot of Australian acts too, and as part of that, you know, they're all coming through L.A. because you know that's where they were showcasing. They would showcase New York and L.A. and it just made more sense to be in LA, you know, although every band, you know, Boston's a top 10 market, every band will come through Boston eventually. But the thing about being in LA is everyone's here. So the manager flies in for the show, the agent's here, the publisher's here, you know, mm-hmm. the label's here. It's a lot easier to kind of meet with your clients, hold their hands, see them, stay in their face, and kind of, you know, be there for them and help them out. So it just made sense to be here. And so I dove in, you know, all the way and came here. You know, for a while I was tentative at it, you know, at first. That's why I was kind of, you know, living in Boston and, you know, almost commuting for a few years, going back and forth a lot. But then I you know, I just made the change because you know, at the end of the day, if you really want to be in the music business in this day and age, you've got to either be in New York, LA, or Nashville. It's just, you got to be. It's where the jobs are. And where the artists are.
Now, what would you say is the real, there's a lot of differences, but just kind of main differences about promotion on West Coast versus East Coast?
I don't know. I mean, you know, You know, we do radio promotion, so, you know, we have to talk to every station everywhere. So, you know, I think the coasts are always going to be a little bit more progressive, both of the coasts, mm-hmm. and then the middle is mm-hmm. middle is going to follow. You know, I think the people are a little different. You know, I mean, the Northeast is pretty progressive, right? So you have a lot of college students here, so it keeps it young and vibrant. There's a lot of, you know, just new bands all the time. You know, Boston was great about that because, you know, you'd have a 250,000 college students come arrive every year, and luckily right. 10% would drop out every year, you know, and start bands. You know, so, you know, but I mean, you know, the I think it's easier for bands to tour in the Northeast and the East Coast. I think that's different, you know, in terms of working a band in that area, because you've got so many more cities and more people in a smaller area. Whereas on the West Coast, you know, things are, you know, you've only got, you know, five cities along the entire coast that are kind of worthwhile playing, and they're really spread out. So, so that's different and harder, you know. But other than that, I mean, it's basically the same. I mean, if you want to promote something, you've got to attack the whole country. And generally, you know, the two coasts will lead, and the middle will follow, is generally how it, you know, tends to work. But
yeah, that's interesting. I just find personally with, you know, LA, it's obviously like a lot more difficult to kind of gain a local following, build up a fan base versus Boston, you know, New York. It's a lot more sort of like, you know, neighborhoods and communities kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, LA is an industry town, right? So, I mean, people don't really want to go out for fun as much as maybe they do in Boston, because you're going out so much for work at night, right? I mean, I could go out 20 nights a month easily seeing clients if I wanted to.
Yeah.
Clients and friends and whatnot. You know, that's hard, and it's such a big place, and there's so much noise and distraction that it's much harder to stand out and create a scene here, for sure, in LA. When it does happen, when there is a scene, when something does pop out, then it's pretty real and it's pretty exciting. I mean, what was happening in Silver Lake and what was happening at Largo and all that, you know, over the years has been, you know, is pretty exciting. So it can happen. I mean, you know, the great thing about it is that everyone is here, so you can, you know, there are lots of opportunities for artists to start getting, you know, attention. You know, you can go, you know, all of a sudden you meet the Balcony TV person or the Jam in the Van person or the whatever it may be. You know, there's so many different outlets for doing shows and promotion and marketing. You know, there's podcasters here, there's broadcasters here, there's radio here, there's press here, there's bloggers here. It's everyone's here. You know, everyone you meet when you go out is involved in something that could potentially help you as an artist, and that's exciting. That energy is exciting, and that doesn't mean you have to be obnoxious and you got to hit everyone over the head with it. But you know, the good thing about being here is that you are going to meet people that can help your band or your act or your career, you know, and that's awesome. You know, in Boston, when I go out to a cocktail party, I'm the music guy. Like, I'm the one guy, you know, in the entire play. You know, everyone else is a banker or, you know, works for Fidelity or is an accountant or sells insurance or whatever. In LA, you go and everyone in the room is in the creative arts, you know, some sort of industry. And that's fun, you know, and you end up collaborating on stuff, which is great.
Yeah, that's awesome. Talk to me a little bit about just sort of the evolution that you've seen with, you know, the interwebs and literally like platforms, you know, arriving weekly online for artist distribution or promotion or that kind of thing. And how do you feel like that's really sort of changed the state of music?
Well, it's lowered the barriers, right? So that everyone, you know, everyone can get their music out and online and has a potential to create a story there. The good news, it's probably also the bad news, right? In that everything is out and, you know, how do you stand out? And, you know, it used to be, you know, the saying used to be 20 years ago, oh, there's 30,000 records released a year. How are you going to stand out? Well, you know, now it's 150,000 or something like that.
Right.
You know,
right.
Records are coming because everyone can put a record out. You know, so it's definitely changed. I mean, it's great that those platforms exist, you know, and it's great that there's some things that naturally bubble up out of that. Those are the exceptions. The hard part is how do you stand out now? And how do you create a story, you know, so that you can get noticed? I mean, you know, you can't just put your record on Spotify and think that, you know, people are just going to find it naturally, you know. So I think as much as things have changed, a lot of things are still the same in that it still takes a lot of promotion, it still takes a lot of marketing, it still takes a lot of hard work, and it takes time and perseverance. You got to put the time in, you got to put the hours in, you know, to build. And you know, I think we're at a much more stable place now, you know, in 2018 than we have been in the last 5-10 years. I mean, I don't feel like Spotify is going to go away. You know, I think feel like it's here, you know, whereas, you know, 10 years ago you had bands that were massive on, you know, MySpace, and a year later they lost all of their fans because MySpace went away.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think that's going to happen again. I mean, you know, Facebook is here, Spotify is here, they're entrenched. So, you know, this is kind of the new reality, and you just have to kind of learn to work with them even as they change their algorithms and whatever. But, you know, so I think that ultimately that's a good thing. I think it's harder. I do think it's harder for bands. I mean, there is much more competition, much less headspace for people to kind of pay attention to all the different bands there that are out there and artists that are out there. So, you know, you have to navigate that. I think that part is definitely harder. So for all the good things that the internet has brought, I think it's, you know, in terms of the quote unquote level playing field, it's also made it harder because of that same level playing field. So it's an interesting time for sure. I think promotion and marketing are still kind of the keys in terms of getting to that next level as an artist, and ultimately having great music. I mean, that's always going to be the number one factor.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I've heard my guests share, you know, that work in marketing, et cetera, for music is, you know, there's this illusion that everybody is accessible now because, you know, I can find you on Twitter, I can find you on Facebook, but you still need that relationship, you know?
That's right.
It's like, just because I like tweet you 50 times, like, listen to my mixtape, you know, I have a new EP. Hey, listen to my EP. It's not going to make a damn bit of difference. You know, it's like, if I don't have a relationship with you.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, I get probably 30, 40 pitches a day on email, you know, of this is my music. How are you going to compete with that? You know, and how are you going to, you think, you know, just by tweeting at me or hitting me on Facebook, or if you hit me on Facebook or Twitter, I may be apt to want to check that music out even less, you know, because it's not coming in through normal kind of business channels. Right. And it's kind of throwing me off a little bit. Right. So, I mean, everyone, you know, it is a problem for folks. I think a lot of artists think that they can just, you know, tweet you or hit you on, you know, Facebook, and that's perfectly acceptable. Or I'm always shocked at how many people call me on my cell phone, you know, just, you know, during business hours, you know, which is, you know, it's like, if you've got my cell number, you can probably find my business number, and you'd probably get a much warmer Adam on the phone if you called my house.
Right.
But, you know, all that said, I do listen to everything that comes in, and I do respond to every email. It just is hard, you know, and I'm nobody. I mean, I can only imagine what, you know, a gatekeeper at, you know, a television show or, you know, a major radio station is getting, you know. So, you know, it is great that people have this access, for sure, but you do have to know how to kind of manage it, and it's not as easy as one thinks. I mean, there's no substitute for kind of getting out there and meeting people, and, you know, going to these different events out there and meeting people and going up and saying hi to the panelists, and, you know, going to the South by Southwest and the Canadian Music Weeks and music expos out there and whatever, just and meeting people and networking.
Yeah.
Nothing better than
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what's coming down the pike? I've taken much of your time already.
That's fine. No worries.
What's coming down the pike for a Planetary Group? Like, what do you kind of see for the rest of the year, et cetera?
Oh, just more of the same. You know, I mean, we're just promoting away. So, you know, we're always promoting. We're excited about the new Courtney Barnett record, which will be out in a couple weeks, which we'll be promoting.
I like her. You know, I heard
she's great.
Where I get my new music is BBC Radio 1.
Yep.
That's kind of my
yep.
go-to. And I'm yep. always like, I feel really superior because I'm like, ha, I heard that song like, you know, a year
yeah.
ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But I heard her and I was like, who is this? You
yeah.
know, because just the way that she sings and everything, I was just, it really caught my attention, and it's not usually my style, but
right.
she really stood out to me, and I just loved her attitude and what kind of came through her music. Do you know what I mean?
I totally agree. And, you know, as funny as when we were starting with that, a lot of folks in Australia, you know, would tell me that they didn't think that she was going to resonate in America. They thought it might be too Australian, you know, too quirky, because all the references were in a lot of her songs were Australian based. But,
yeah.
You know, but they were also very much just based in everyday life, too, in terms of,
mm-hmm.
you know, the mundane and your reality. So it did resonate. It was very honest and truthful, and people latched on to that. But we were very blessed. I mean, we were involved with her really early. Her manager mm-hmm. had invited me out to see her show in Australia, and you know, I don't remember there really being anyone there, and it was mm-hmm. just really early, and we started working with her then, and it's really blossomed, you know, nicely, you know. But it's been a good 4 years of solid work for her, you know, it's another one of these overnight, you know, 5 year sensations or whatever, you know.
Right.
I mean, Portugal the Man or another one, you know, that was our big success story last year, and mm-hmm. you know, that went number one at pretty much every format, and you
that
know, we've been working
everywhere.
With them.
That is everywhere. I was saying that
yeah.
to my boyfriend the other day. I was like,
yeah.
remember when, you know, someone that I used to know was out, and it was everywhere. Like
yeah.
this Portugal
yeah.
the Man song is everywhere, you know. Pretty amazing.
It is.
So.
It is, and you know, and that's probably, you know, a 10-year overnight success story, right, for most people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they did mm-hmm. it the right way, and they were very consistent with releases, and they, you know, had a small label, mid-sized label, major label involved, you know, and they toured a lot, and they worked those markets, and they were, you know, the critics liked them, college radio liked them, specialty radio liked them, and then they wrote the right song. You know, and
mm-hmm.
then it all lines up. You know, they had the great bass underneath there so that when they did write the right song, it was ready to go. You know,
yeah.
and so, you know, that's ultimately how it goes. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of, you know, future plans for Planetary, I say it's more of the same. You know, we're 25 years in here, and you know, I just want to keep doing this for another, you know, 20 years or so, and then I'll hit the beach.
Right on. Well, you're right here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. But you don't. Well, when you live. Well, as you know, when you live in LA, you don't actually ever see the beach. So
yeah,
you're
exactly.
too busy working, right? But
I know.
But yeah, this is what I love to do. So there's not really anything else that I want to do. You know, I mean, this I turned a hobby and into my career, and so
mm-hmm.
I like getting up every day and going to work. This is what I love doing. I love working with bands. Love going to shows, and you know, love. You know, building band careers.
Cool. That's so cool. I guess final question would just be, you know, today, if somebody wanted to get into music promotion, what's the sort of road you would suggest? Would it be internship or...
Yeah, you got to intern. You have to intern. Be willing to intern as much as you possibly can. Even after you graduate, just work for free, get involved, meet people, find out what you like, find out what you don't
yeah.
like, find out the type of company you want to work for, what type of thing you want to do in the industry. You know,
yeah.
when I was going to school, there weren't any of these music business majors happening, you know, and it
right.
wasn't like a thing. And now you've got a lot mm-hmm. of schools offering that. And I'm always shocked when I get resumes in from folks that have done the music business major that they haven't interned during it. you know? And mm-hmm. so, you know, I can't stress that enough. You know, go and don't think that you're above it. Stuff the envelopes, you know? I mean, it's like my first several months at Rykodisc, I was just stuffing envelopes, doing mailings, you know?
Yeah.
But that sounds like a horrible thing, right? But you know what? But you know what's good about it? Look at those mailing labels. Look at the names of those people. Learn who those people are on those labels, because those are the players in the industry. You know, that's why they're getting sent the record. Now, obviously, stuff is not mailed out as much anymore, but it's the same mentality. You know, you need, when you go in there as an intern, just soak up. Be a sponge. I always tell my interns here and my new employees, listen to me talking on the phone. Listen to my pitch. Listen to the bullshit I'm shoveling, whatever it may be. You know, learn that game. Learn the story, and it's just so important to do that. And you know, it's expensive to live in New York and LA, so it's hard to do internships. But you know, you really need to. And you know, I can't tell you how many people I've hired over the years because someone quit, and I look around. And I got nothing except this guy has been interning for me for 4 months. I go, hey, you've been a pretty good intern. You want a job type of thing? You know, it's right place, right time, you know,
and that
happens a lot. And, you know, if you want to put yourself in a position to win and you want to make yourself known as an intern too, there's nothing worse than having an intern that is just sitting there and kind of not engaging as well. Like, I'm not saying get, you know, you don't want to get in people's faces, but you want to be an active participant and ask questions. And I want to know a little bit more about you. You know, so don't be a mouse and just sit there, because if I start noticing you and you're kind of in my face, then I'm thinking about you. And then maybe there is an, you know, when something opens up, then I do think of you. Or if a friend of mine is looking for a job, I think of you. Or also I'll remember you in 6 months when you use me as a reference. Or in 6 months, someone else is asking me again or whatever. You know, you want to be noticed. I'm always also surprised how many interns don't stand out a little bit. So you've got to, people don't give you a lot in this business. You have to kind of take it. There's a fine line there, and you have to navigate that and not be obnoxious about it, but definitely, you know, make yourself known and get out there and be involved and volunteer and, you know, go out to as many shows as possible. I can't stress that enough. Like, wherever you are, go to shows and meet who those players are. Even if you're in a you know, a second tier, you know, tertiary market, you know, not one of the major cities, you know, learn who, you know, books the shows at the clubs there. Who's the local promoter? Who's the local, you know, blogger, you know, that's covering all the action, you know, in that town, whatever it may be. Start networking. It's really important, and it'll lead to more, for sure.
That's fantastic. Well, Adam, again, thank you so much for your time, and I think that people got a lot of wisdom from the Boston boy, so thank you again.
Yeah, my pleasure. Happy to talk to you.
Again, special thanks to Adam for being such a trooper with all the technical bullshit that went down, and just such a great interview. You can find him at planetarygroup.com. That's planetarygroup.com. They're also on all the social media platforms. So thus ends another great week. Again, we are all about careers in music, the movers and shakers and innovators like Adam in music, all aspects of the music industry. I really hope you enjoyed this episode and stay tuned for more. Please like, subscribe, share, give us some stars on iTunes, Google Play, etc. Show us some love and spread the good word so we can reach as many people as possible. I am your host, L. Ariel. You can find my music at lariel.com. That's lariel.com. I have an EP coming out. I don't know exactly when, but it will be very, very soon. So I will keep you guys posted. Have a wonderful week. Take good care. And remember to keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't give up.